Let's do it.
Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, yeah. Oh, 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 yeah, it's time, yo. It's time. It's time for African American Empowerment. 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. It's your main man, Marvin Rome, coming to you again live. We're curing ourselves. We're doing the work. That work is going to start. Oh, yeah, right now. Let's go. Come on, Luther. Oh, yeah. Hey, welcome. Welcome to the Empowerment Hour. It's 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. It's Empowerment Saturday. It's African American Empowerment Saturday, brought to you by the National African American Empowerment Association, better known as the NAAEA. Get used to it, right? It's for us. It's for you. It's for me. It's for our family. And yes, it's for our communities. How better way to start your Saturday, or at least getting midway through it, without having some empowerment in your life, right? Having some conversations, some candid conversations about what we need to do, right? We're curing ourselves now. We're in the Curing Ourselves series, and we're going to talk today about curing ourselves through community conversations. That means we got to have a discussion. We got to have some tools, right? That means we got to have some strategies, and we got to have some conversations, some real clear conversations, right? Some real conversations that we have to have. We got to do it. But first, before we get started with our conversation today, let's go down into what the NAAEA is all about. And we have to be able to get to a place where you, the listener, involve yourself, right? We can't always stand on the sideline and be like, okay, somebody else is doing it. This is for us. And the mission of the National African American Empowerment Association is to ensure that the needs of the African American community are met through the development of programs and services that educate, inspire, motivate, and empower who? You, your kids, your family, your friends, us, our people. Guess what? We need you. We need you to become a member. We need you to share the conversation. We need you to have these critical conversations, discussions, fellowships, whatever you need to do to get the message across. And we're talking in five areas, right? We need to work on ourselves. There's no doubt about that. So the first commitment is to working on yourself, your own stuff. Right, you got to have to look at yourself. Stop pointing the finger at other people and look at yourself first. The inner work, the work that you need to do first, the work that you need to do within your mind. But we're looking at five areas today, and it's here. Politics. Again, we got to have a political agenda, right? Right where you are in your community, in your town, in your city, in your state, right? That branches out to a national political agenda that covers all of us. It umbrellas all of us that we're working together for the same common cause. That is to have better communities, better environments, better cities, better towns, better states, better communities where we live, right? Where there's plenty of dysfunction to go around. All you got to do is look at the news wherever you live, and there's a highly populated or densely populated area where African Americans are, and you're going to see it. Right? It's true. Let's stop denying it. Let's take our hands from over our eyes and take our fingers out of our ears, and let's see it for what it is and start having some real serious dialogue about what we're going to do on a local and national and state level, wherever you are. Next is economics. In order to drive this thing forward, you can have a political agenda, but you need some money, right? You need some money flowing through your household. You need a business. You need an economic plan. And then when you get the money, you need to know what to do with it, how to handle it, how to manage it, and how this system works, right? You got to understand how capitalism works. You just do. But who's telling you that? Who's telling our kids we need to understand how the system that we live in works? Okay, you free, go. But now what? What you going to do, right? How you going to take care of yourself? How you going to feed your kids, your family, right? And how you going to sustain that for generations, that you leave somebody with something? And somebody trying to figure out how they going to bury you, because you haven't done the work of getting yourself in line to where they don't have to be struggling to put you in the ground and keep you there. How about that? That was real. For real. That's real. All right. So now it's athletics, health, wellness, fitness, and nutrition. So I'm spelling it out, P-E-A-C-E, if you don't get it, right? We need peace in our lives. You need to have an athletic agenda. I'm asked every week, what are you doing, right? Are you working out today? Have you took care of your body or taken care of your body? Sometimes it come out that way because that's how far. Have you taken care of your body? Have you done the work today? What are you putting in your body? What are you putting in your mind? Are you protecting your mind? Are you taking care of your physical, mental, and emotional health? That's the question. You're going to have to take care of yourself, people. You're going to have to pull back, and then you're going to have to pull up. You got to do some work, right? But we got to be able to understand how health disparities work, the food that we eat, right? I know we like soul food. I know you like some fried chicken and some fried fish and some good old macaroni and cheese. But you're going to have to pull back from some of that stuff, some of the drinks that we putting in our body, some of the substances we're going to have to pull away from because we got to take care of ourselves. You're talking about longevity now. You need an athletic agenda, a health and wellness, fitness, and nutrition agenda. Then there's culture. Again, there's cultural values that we need to put in place, right, to help guide and maintain our people. We got to have to be able to transition our kids to some rites of passage programs to help them to be grounded in who they are and not following people that don't know where they're going. We got to stop listening to people who are directing our kids in the wrong direction, having us to understand how important culture is to developing our people, our communities, our families. And lastly, it's a comprehensive education. Right, that education has to get us to understanding who in the world that we are on all levels. That's mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. So today, Brother George isn't here with us, of course. He's taking some time off. My brother, we're praying for you. I know you're listening today. You're with us. And I want to keep telling you that we're praying for you. Get better, get better, get better. So again, every time I play that song, it's for you today, brother. So I'm going to, you know what, George, because I like you so much, I'm gonna just crank this out. I ain't going to the lines right now, but this is for you, Brother George, before I even get started. It's for Brother George. Oh, yeah. Brother George. Come on. Yeah. I just gave you a sample, just a sample. Hey, just hold on. Okay, so what I'm going to talk about today is, again, curing ourselves. Guess who got to do the work to do that? Us, right? And so, again, I'm going to give you just a little tidbit because Brother George not here of the Willie Lynch moment. I won't go all the way through it, but I want you to understand what we're dealing with, right? Because we're dealing with a mindset, but we're also going to have conversations about what happened to us so we can understand what to do next. So I'm going to go brief into that, then I'm going to the lines with the conversation. Got to understand what's going on, people. It's a mindset. It's conditioning.
This speech was delivered by Willie Lynch on the banks of the James River in the colony of Virginia in 1712. Lynch was a British slave owner in the West Indies. He was invited to the colony of Virginia in 1712 to teach his methods to slave owners there. The term lynching is derived from his last name. Greetings, gentlemen. I greet you here on the bank of the James River in the year of our Lord, 1712. First, I shall thank you, the gentlemen of the colony of Virginia, for bringing me here. I'm here to help you solve some of your problems with slaves. Your invitation reached me on my modest plantation in the West Indies, where I have experimented with some of the newest and still the oldest methods for control of slaves. Ancient Rome would envy us if my program is implemented, as our boat sails south on the James River, named for our illustrious king, whose version of the Bible we cherish. I saw enough to know that your problem is not unique. While Rome used cords of wood as crosses for standing human bodies along its highways in great numbers, you were here using the tree and the rope on occasion. I caught the whiff of a dead slave hanging from a tree a couple miles back. And you're not only losing valuable stock by hangings, you are having uprisings, slaves are running away, your crops are sometimes left in the fields too long for maximum profit, you suffer occasional fires, your animals are killed. Gentlemen, you know what your problems are. I do not have to elaborate. I'm not here to enumerate your problems. I'm here to introduce you to a method of solving them. In my bag here, I have foolproof methods for controlling your black slaves. I guarantee every one of you that if installed correctly, it will control the slaves for at least 400 years. My method is simple. Any member of your family or your overseer can use it. I have outlined a number of differences among slaves, and I take these differences and I make them bigger. I use fear, distrust, and envy for control purposes. These methods have worked on my modest plantation in the West Indies, and it will work throughout the South. Take this simple little list of differences and think about them. On the top of my list is age, but it's there only because it starts with an A. The second is color or shade. There is intelligence, size, sex, sizes of plantations, status on plantations, attitude of owners, whether the slaves live in the valley, on the hill, east, west, north, south, have fine hair, coarse hair, or is tall or short. Now that you have a list of differences, I shall give you an outline of action. But before that, I shall assure you that distrust is stronger than trust, and envy stronger than adulation, respect, or admiration.
I'm stopped right there. It's about the differences. You're divided by the differences, the differences, the differences, the differences. He tall, he short, he got money, he don't, right? What he look like, what she look like, what she got, what she don't got. That's right, I said don't got. You better understand one thing, is that there is a system of control still in place for your mind that exists. The conditioning exists. What we want to do here is get you to change some conditioning, examine yourself and your system, go out in and develop your community. Get yourself in a position where your kids are having a good place to live, right? That they can go out in peace and not be, listen to this, not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character, what they're saying out of their mouths and what they're doing. Here's the deal, like the brother said, who is receiving these babies when they come out? And if we're not getting to that, if we're not teaching, training, and development, these are what these conversations are going to be all about. How we can help ourselves, one, heal, but two, understand what we need to do going forward. I got one more clip and then I'm going to the lines. Check this one out.
Post-traumatic slave syndrome is an explanatory theory that really looks at multi-generational trauma. One of the things that's difficult for people is their first response is, oh my God, that happened so long ago. We're talking about people being captured, shipped, sold, beaten, raped, experimented on. And then you have to ask the question, did the trauma continue? Yes. So 300 years of trauma, no help, freed. No help, more trauma. If it's a sustained trauma, then the impact of that is also sustained. When we look at multi-generational trauma, we're looking at people who are maybe victims of natural disasters and their families and their children and generations of folks who have experienced war. And we know that there are residual mental, emotional, traumatic impacts. And what I did was I started to look at the African-American experience, starting with slavery, as a real clear, long-enduring trauma. I started to see that there were clear connections between that survival behavior and contemporary living in African-American experience. I started to see...
Let me stop right there. We're talking about survival here, right? And we've learned to survive, many of us, and not thrive. We're talking about communities, right? Our communities have to get to a place where we are thriving. That's what we want. I said thrival, y'all. You know that's my new word. But how are we going to continue to thrive, right? How are we going to continue to understand what we need to do in order to move forward, right? We have to be able to put ourselves in position to be successful, right? Help our kids, right? We need to determine what the future for our babies are going to be like for babies of color. Right, of African-American descent, specifically when it relates to the NAAEA, right? How are we going to pave a way that our kids can compete to get really good schools, really good families, really good parents, that we're excelling? And that is the norm, not as we continue to adapt to a system that continues to work inside and outside of us, but how do we get the work done? So we're curing ourselves, we're having the conversations, right? And that's the beginning of our community conversations, talking about how we're going to cure ourselves. Again, you can call in 845-277-9250 if you want to get in on the discussion. The line is pretty good right now, but guess what? If you hear something you want to talk about, don't be afraid to call in. This is your show. It's for us. It's what we do. All right, you know we got to get started now. Here we go. Brother George, back to you again. Here we go. We're going to 9282 to kick it off, and then I'm going down to 8128. Come on. Y'all know what he's going to do. Come on. I'm going to let that play a little bit. All right, 9282. What's happening, brother?
nothing, brother. As-salamu alaykum, brothers and sisters. Hope all is well.
As-salam. All is well. How are you?
I'm fine, brother. Thank you. Look, you mentioned earlier that we must teach our children the truth. We must educate our children, okay? Provide them with knowledge. So when I say knowledge and educate, that's the truth. We have to teach them the truth. And as I've said before, one of the characteristics of the one and being the one is you have to be honest with yourself. Okay?
True.
We have to be. Now let me say, I'm not trying to be offensive because I love myself, meaning I love my people. I love
Fresh
my people
ourselves.
Dearly. You know, I will die for my people, for myself. So I'm not trying to be offensive. But you said we must teach our children the truth. So therefore, we cannot, should not teach our children anything that we can't prove is true. If you can't
go
prove
along with that
is true and know it's right, don't teach it to your children. Don't pass it along to your children. If it's not true and you don't know and you have no means of proving that it is true, don't teach it to your children. Okay? Nip that in the bud quick. Like I said last week, if we can't prove that Jesus is the only begotten Son of God, don't teach that to your children. Don't teach that to you. You got to prove that, man, before you pass that on to your children. You teach your children that they are children of God and God is their daddy, but then you tell them there's the one named Jesus who is his only begotten Son. If you can't prove that, don't teach that to your children. And for my Muslim brothers and sisters, if you can't prove that there are going to be 72 virgins waiting on you in heaven when you get there after you sacrifice your life for Allah and you give all for Allah and you die for Allah in the name of Allah, that the thing you're looking for is 72 virgins in heaven, don't teach that to your children. First of all, what are you saying about God? What are you saying about Allah? That he's going to reward you with 72 virgins in heaven? What are you going to be having sex with for eternity in heaven with your 72 virgins, or a reward from God, a reward from Allah for what you did on earth here? Please, what did that say about Allah? What does that say about God? He's telling you, do what I done told you to do down on earth and sacrifice yourself in my name. And when you get here, I'm going to have 72 of my finest bitches waiting on you. That sounds like a pimp. You know what I mean? We have to be real with ourselves. We have to accept the reality of the situation that we're in. Look at the stuff that we believe in, and then we're gonna pass it on to our children. You know you ain't gonna bleed that down in the hood. You know you tell somebody, man, you can't prove that. It's what you've been taught, and we've been taught this on the plantation. Go back to Willie Lynch now. We've been taught this stuff on the plantation in slavery. That this is what God is all about. This is what Allah is all about. This is what Jesus is all about. We learn that in slavery on the plantation, and we pass it on and on and on to our children. And that's why our children laugh at us. They look at us sometimes and wonder, in that early age, my mom and daddy crazy. They said, what? To do this and do this. That's why they don't go to church or like to go to the temple early on in life. Because if they grew up in the hood, if they grew up in the projects, one thing the projects will teach you, and this is what I've told my children at Armstrong, if you anybody in the hood, if you anybody in the projects, the one thing the projects will teach you is how to recognize game. It will teach you how to recognize bullshit. Okay? And that's why our children rebel. Because they're rebelling from us because we're not teaching them properly. Like I said when I started this conversation, if we cannot prove that it's the truth, don't teach it to our children. Don't lead them down a path of, well, trust in me. How am I going to trust in you when you're running down some crap? When you just told me what, and then they're going to repeat it back, and they don't repeat it to you sometimes because they don't want to challenge you at an early age. But as they grow older, that's when...
Whoops.
Sorry about that.
You know, they rebel, and we be going and done. I mean, look, we live in a world that we're taught that to get to heaven, we can't do this, we can't do this, we can't do this, we can't do this, we can't do this. If things we should not do, and the damn thing about it is everything we're told not to do, all of us do them. At some point of our lives, we do them. Everything we're taught not to do, we do. But they give you an out. If you believe the story, they say all you got to do in the end is confess your sins in the name of the begotten Son, and you will go to heaven. And the only sin that they won't forgive is if you kill yourself. So you got to stay here and suffer a little longer. These are the things we tell our children. Oh, yeah, you can. I mean, you can go out there and do crack. You can do coke. You can do you can do whatever so long as before you die, you confess your sins. You're still going to heaven. So everybody still go to one party and do whatever they need to do. You just got to confess them sins before you die. If you can't prove that, don't teach it to your children. You can't prove that there is no heaven up in the sky. You can't prove that there is no life after death. I don't know
all
anybody
right,
that died and came
to
back.
I'm going to have to wrap you right there. I love you to death, but I got to wrap you right there.
Yes, sir.
I like
yes,
it.
Sir.
All right, now I'm going to tell
yes,
you the truth. And you know that some people don't want to work with that at all, right? Because I'm going to tell you this, right? Some people don't want you to touch what they believe in reference to God. That's all I'm going to say.
I understand.
Right? But I got
I understand.
You. I got you. I'm coming back to you. I'm going to have to play this music right here so I can talk to y'all real quick. The brother got some really good points, right? He really do. I like it. There it is. Oh. I got to call my mama on this one. Mother, mother. Right, what's going on, right, in these streets? And like he's saying, some of the stuff we do, right, with our kids, we're misleading them, misguiding them. I got that part. What are you going to do to change your community, your own mindset, right? And like he said, don't teach something that you don't know. I got that part, right? We've been conditioned a whole lot in slavery, but I think we have to transition again to have those critical conversations in those areas. But I think, again, sometimes when you get to the heart of people's politics and their religion, you step on their toes and they don't like going there, so it makes them uncomfortable and they ain't going to want to show up and they ain't going to want to talk because you make them squeamish, you make them pinch, you know, a little bit. So here's what I think, right? We got to have effective communication, right? And that requires us to have a level of leadership and organization and negotiation that really looks at how we can look at the perspective of not only ourselves but others. And then in that process, develop what I call self-management strategies along the way as well. We're going to have to do that, right? We're going to have to figure out how are we going to be able to engage each other without us being offensive and without us really saying, well, I don't want to have this conversation because you're talking about me. We're going to have to grow up. We're going to have to mature. All right. That's what I got. All right. Here it is. I'm going over to 8128. I got you. Brother George, this is for you. 8128, you're next. I got you, though, brother. Right here, 8128. What you got, brother? How you doing?
Kelly, how you doing, my brother?
I'm doing well.
Today?
All right.
Yes,
all right.
Yeah, I got a little piece I wanted to read to everyone. But first, I wanted to make a I wanted to read something about the definition, and I'm sure most of us have heard of Afrocentricity, but I'm not quite sure if everyone really knows what it means or where it comes from, what it's about. But this is something that I think that we need to know. And I'm going to define that before I read what I'm going to read. I got a little thing that I wrote down the other night.
Mm-hmm.
After thinking about us. And thinking about the situations that we've been going through here. But first, let me read this thing about Afrocentricity. First, let me start with a worldview. Okay? A worldview is a way of thinking that organizes all aspects of one's life, including intra, inter and intra thought and behaviors and one's functioning in social systems and institutions in the community. Like, for instance, family, food, job, religious institutions, and in the larger society. Intrapersonal thoughts refer to one's attitudes, beliefs, values, and expectations. Interpersonal behaviors refers to one's interactions with others. Worldviews provide us with guidelines for living. They affect our perceptions, thoughts, feelings, inferences, and behaviors and how we experience the external world. Okay, simply put, a worldview provides us with a framework for interpreting events and understanding the world. Now, an Afrocentric worldview finds its base and foundation in the worldview of African people. It consists of the values, beliefs, and behaviors of indigenous people of Africa and those in the diaspora who share this cultural heritage. Okay? Now, it's cultural. Now, it is calculated by and represents a general design of living and patterns for interpreting reality, how we look at things from our perspective, not from no one else. Now, Asante defines Afrocentricity as an attitude and action that promotes the well-being of people of African descent. African centricity is a mode of thought and action in which the sensuality of African interests, values, and perspectives dominates. It is a place where African people are in the center of an analysis of African phenomena. It's a worldview that has been contrasted with Eurocentric worldview that is derived from European culture. The Afrocentric worldview differs from a Eurocentric view along several dimensions, including spirituality, interdependence, and collectiveness, time orientation, death, immortality, kinship, these dimensions as well. Eurocentricity promotes the cultural template for the people of Europe, European descent, whereas Afrocentricity worldviews provide a cultural template for people of African descent. Simple as that. Okay?
That makes
sense. So we are talking about different views of listen, we as a people have a different way of looking at things. Seeing things, feeling things, acting, responding, and thinking about things. And we need to never forget that. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, with that, I'm going to read something that I wrote the other day. It's called Something is Wrong. Something is wrong.
Something's wrong.
People have known something is wrong. We have, as a people, known this for a long time. We feel it. We see it. We even smell and taste it. And yet, we have known it ever since our first captive ancestors were tied together and led to our European enslavement cages in the shores of our beloved motherland. We know something was wrong. Yes, we have fought and battled with each other and taken captive before, but not like this. Something was wrong. We knew it by the way they looked at us, treated us, and the level of inhumanity they subject us to. Being a spiritual people, this treatment, this energy, this inhumanity, this was strange, confusing, and alien. So much so that depending on our nature, many of us fought and rebelled in whatever way we could. Others broke down. Others continuously planned to assist. But we never lost hope. This type of inhumanity, this bondage, was too unreal to work, to last. There is no official record. But our black scholars have determined that at least 100 million of our ancestors gave their lives, not forgiveness, But we still continue to rebel for the last 500 years because something is wrong. In spite of this inhumanity, and because of it, we have continued to survive, try to live, and produce throughout this insanity. All the time knowing something was wrong. This something also for the past 200 years inspired our greatest minds to explore, research, and examine this wrong from every possible direction. They have even named it Afrocentricity and determined what we must do to change and overcome it. Even with them murdering and trying to silence the great voices, our great voices, who dared to speak it. But it's something they have never been able to take from us or destroy. Afrocentricity is a term that describes and explores and illuminates who we are, our uniqueness and true selves as a people, totally separate and apart from what we have named Eurocentricity. It is what is wrong. We are not like and can never be anything but who we are. For 500 years, we have consistently attempted.
I like that.
We have consistently attempted to destroy, erase, and hide who and what we are as a malevolent people because we have never denied our innermost humanity. Even under the most unimaginable conditions, we have continued to create and inspire this world as only can the descendants of the first people do. Through all the wrong, we have always fought to make it right for ourselves and others. In fact, we have always gained more from others have always gained more from our sacrifice than us. Me neither. What our great minds and leaders and scholars have proven through disproving every lie they ever told about us has proven who we are and illuminated the way home. We have verified the truth. What is wrong is now us, and only we can cure. We have attempted to adapt to an alien culture, and it is killing us and driving our children to insanity, an insane act of humanity against our nature. In fact, our scientists have proven that Eurocentricity is destroying us. The only cure is us rediscovering ourselves by allowing our natural selves to live and express and to become whole. These words are not new to us because whenever we come together as a people, we flourish, grow, achieve, and create independence without any help or assistance from others. At this point, we only have two choices. Continue to attempt to live, survive against ourselves, or rediscover who we are, really are again. Our scholars have already done the work. We just have to listen. Now, that was just something that I was inspired to write the other night. And it's just basically about us recognizing ourselves. You know, we are not Eurocentric people. We are following, listening to, and judging ourselves by standards that don't even apply. They do not have applied to us. Our uniqueness is totally outside of the realm of their scrutiny or ability to judge or to make determinations against them. So we need to stop comparing ourselves to someone who cannot possibly be compared to us.
True.
And look at our own uniqueness okay, to change our frame of reference, our thinking, our judgment about ourselves compared to and up in comparison against somebody who doesn't even apply.
All right.
Doesn't even apply.
I'm going to hold you right there, brother. I'm going to hold you right there. I got to get to somebody else on the line, but I like that. Right, so we're going to talk about, we're going to ask some of the listeners what it is that they heard about that and then share their own thoughts. But I appreciate that, brother. I'm going to try to wrap around to you. I'm going to slide over to, let's see, I'm going over to 4756 in just a minute. 4756, I'm coming to you in just a minute, right? The brother said a whole lot, right? Who created your worldview is the question, right? The attitudes, the beliefs, the actions, the behaviors that we actually currently manifest right now, where do they come from? The thoughts, the feelings, the moves, the emotions, the actions, the activities, all of those things, where do they come from? Are you your original self? Where did your worldview come from? Where did it originate? What are your values, right? Those are the conversations that we got to have. Those are the topics. The brother said something's wrong. Something is wrong. Right, there's some instability that we're going to have to address because we're going to have to figure out who we are. I'm sliding on over now to 4756, man. 4756, what you got?
Greetings, Brother Warren, a host of New Orleans Wake Up, bringing greetings from New Orleans.
Brother Warren, welcome. How you doing?
Wonderful, right. Wonderful.
Brother said a lot.
Wonderful.
What you got?
Yeah, well, I want to say in response to the first call, first of all, I'd like to say we all know that this is the approaching date of the 100-year mark since the Tulsa Race Massacre in 1921 on May 31st, June 1st. So I just want to throw it out there. We'll be hearing a lot,
that's
seeing
right.
a lot. But we all should still do our part in reading a lot. We shouldn't just sit in front of the TV and watch the documentaries, the news specials on CNN or whatever. We should still read what articles are there. In fact, I have the Smithsonian Magazine, which has a very detailed article about Tulsa, the recent research regarding. But I just want to throw that out there.
Okay.
I want to say three quick things. The first point, number one, I don't think Christianity, Islam, that they are these bad religions. I think that they are very much redeemable things about these religions. It's the people that we've come into contact who said they practice the religion. That's the problem, not the religion itself. And African-American people have used aspects of Christianity for resistance against racism. That's irrefutable. You know, and so
true.
I don't think we should wholeheartedly get into these arguments about religion. That's a no-win situation to say your religion is bad, your religion is bad. That's not going to get us anywhere. We're just going to be intertwined in the mud over that. So I want to say that. Number two, our oppression does not end with slavery. And what I mean is
true.
Problems we're facing today cannot necessarily be traced back to slavery. Now, let me give you an example. The disrespect of the youth to the elders, that's not something that comes from slavery. Because when I was coming up, the youth had disrespect for the elders. Okay, that's something happened recently. The fact that so many people are not preparing meals in the home and have to go to the stores and stand in line and buy food for dinner or for breakfast from Asians and other groups, that didn't come from slavery. We were the food preparers here in this country even during slavery. Those are recent developments. The disintegration of the importance of friendship, cousin, family, that situation we're in now didn't come from slavery. We had, believe it or not, considering we were owned and sold, we kept managing to create strong family bonds in slavery. That's very well documented. This situation we got where we can't look to cousins for us. You know, at one time, like I'm from New Orleans, and a lot of New Orleans people in the 1940s and 50s, they all went to California. Hell, we took trips to California. It was obligated that somebody was going to bring you in, some cousin. That was like an honor. Same with people from Mississippi. who went to Chicago. Mm-hmm. People would leave these places and go to these big cities and didn't know nobody, but you got a phone call, you had a cousin somewhere, and that cousin was going to take you in. Those type of connections to family and bonding, we don't have that today. And that didn't come from because of what happened at this slavery. That's something recently has happened. So I want us to reexamine some of the things we see today and recognize that there are things that are new that we're facing that we've never had before. When you look at the census records of, let's say, the 1920s and 30s, you will see so many families where the fathers are in the home.
Mm-hmm.
The father, you can go back to 1870, you can go back to 1880, because blacks were first put on the census, the federal census in 1870. But you can look at all those census records and you will see fathers in the home. So what I'm saying is a lot of things that we're dealing with now is not necessarily the result of slavery. Now, we can argue it's the result of our continuing oppression, our continuing unproductive relationship with white people. But this thing about oppression is evolving. It's evolution and the results from it. The situation where we have to appear, we have to accept, or we have to be a little bit more tolerant with same-sex unions in our family. That's new. That's something new. That wasn't always, you didn't have that during slavery when you had two women saying they were married and all that kind of stuff. That's new. Now, we have to be sensitive to that issue because so many people in our families are you know, have chosen these lifestyles, so we can't talk harshly about it. I try not to talk harshly about it. I may not like it per se, but we still have to love those people. So all I'm saying is that we have to recognize that a lot of issues we say we have today are new issues. Not preparing meals in the home. Disrespect of young people to the elderly. Okay? Apparently not so many fathers or married couples in the house. These things are recent developments. And so we must analyze those things within the most recent political, economic, and social context that may have created and generated them. And that's all I wanted to contribute to there. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Brother Warren. You're right on it. You're spot on it, right? As we continue to move forward, we're going to have to examine ourselves. But in that examination, we can't be critical. I think all of us are on the boat together, right? Headed in the same direction, whether we want to or not. But I think the brother said earlier, something is wrong. And like Brother Warren said, and I agree with him because I said this a few shows back, something has happened. Something happened to us because we didn't used to be like this, just being honest. But a whole lot happened. We know it don't have all to do with slavery, but something happened, right? So here's the solution steps, right? We have to identify the problems in our families, within ourselves, within our communities. You're exactly right, brother. And even the other brothers talk. We have to be able to look at clearly what those issues are. Identify, go out and get the facts. Like the brother said, don't teach your kids all kind of stuff. That's true, but get the facts, right? Point them in a direction. Have these conversations, right? I can't alienate nobody, right? I can analyze and interpret, right, to get us the education that we need, get us the information that we need, have the conversations that we need, and then start to ask what can we do about the situation so that we can create solutions, right, and then go out and do something about it. We need dialogue. We need conversation. We need community. We need collaboration, but we also need to come together. And I think dividing won't help us. It's only going to hurt us because in the beginning, I told you that Willie Lynch was still playing. So we have to find ways to come together, although we won't agree with every particular ideology and mindset or state of mind that somebody had, but all we got to do is continue to work together. And we have to be able to use these tools again. Communication is going to be important. Leadership, but not only leadership, leadership of self, right? Organization, organizing in our communities, and then being able to negotiate, right? You're going to have the ability to negotiate with one another. And then lastly, you're going to have self-management. I'm going back to 9282, all right? I'm getting ready to come to you in a second. I just want to say that we're going to have to continue to do that work together, right? We're going to have to commit to collaboration and communication. Here we go, 9282, I'm coming to you right now. Thanks, Brother Warren. Brother George.
Bring it!
Uh-huh.
What?
What? To A2, bring it. What you got?
Yes, sir, brother. I just want to say, it just kind of all ties back to what we talked about earlier. But we must understand, we can agree to disagree, but don't be disagreeable. And you know, that's
right.
that's where I am. And I think we must understand that slavery is evolution. It's constantly evolving. Okay. Because we didn't do anything to stop the teachings or the training or the effects of slavery, so that when those in the elders that were here hundreds of years ago die off, every generation that die off, we become further and further and further away from ourselves. When we were, I hate to even say freed from the plantation, because we never were freed from the plantation. But when we were allowed to roam off the plantation and pretend to be free, in those days, our women didn't want blonde hair. Okay?
Whoops.
We didn't want blue eyes. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
We didn't want perm in our hair.
Oh.
Negroes didn't want jerry curls or processes. So as they call, but we evolved because we did not correct slavery. It's like Willie Lynch said, when you put it in effect correct in the last hundreds of years, 300-400 years, he said if we do it correctly, it could even last 1,000 years because it continues to evolve. When I leave this planet and die off, if I don't do anything to change my children or this generation, it's going to get worse. And worse, you keep seeing it, and it keeps getting away from what we truly were as a people, because we do not tell our children, we do not teach us, we do not say, none of us have come up, my generation included, and said, stop this, this is wrong, I'm not teaching this to my children anymore. No, we're not, and every generation that don't stop it, and we keep saying, you know, the children are the future, teach them well and let them lead the way. Show them all the beauty they possess inside, but it doesn't happen. It doesn't, because we don't know the beauty inside, most of us, because it wasn't brought out of us by the preceding generation, by our fathers, our forefathers, and so forth. That was the effect of slavery. Okay? If I can't teach you the truth about who you are, the God in you, I made a note to myself, we must teach our children you are God. You are a child of God. That's
I like
the thing.
That.
The greatness is in you, you know, and if we don't teach them that, then they're lost. We're killing them. You know, we need to bring the greatness out of them, you know, and we also must show them that greatness in us when we are here.
Mm-hmm.
Give them something to see, the example, the reflection. Show them the God in you, the God in them.
I like that.
Hell, the God in me, because I made your mama and I brought you into this life.
Mm-hmm.
We brought you into existence. We've given you the great mind, the great character, the great knowledge. The wealth. Now we must cultivate it and tell you who you, bring it out who you are. We must, what's it say, cultivate it, nourish you
True.
And so forth. The slavery doesn't teach you that. In fact, slavery don't want you to do that. Only thing slavery wants you to teach is that you are a nigger. And a nigger here, a nigger there, and continue to perpetuate that niggerism, you know. And in each generation, yes, it get worse and worse. Yes, there was one time when we were together. I remember growing up, we slept 5 in a bed, but I didn't complain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 5 head toe. You know, I didn't think I was poor, but we were together. We loved each other. We loved ourselves more. We stuck together. And of course, it's going to be this. We showed our love, you know, because that's what we had that held us together. But we didn't bring the knowledge of who we were and itself. We were still teaching our children the crap. And finally, I'm going to say, I just, to me, and I'm going to say it like this, this is as one black man sees it. This is my thing, as one black man sees it. All religions are wrong. All religions are bull. Okay? All of them. All of them are, because they were taught to us in slavery, and they were taught to us to keep us down, keep us tracing unreal things and not look in yourself for the God that's in you. That slavery was to kill the God in us. Therefore, you can be a slave. If I don't kill a God in you, there's no way you're going to ever be a slave. So I got to kill it in you and then pass it on from generation to generation to generation. And instead of becoming a God, you become a fool.
All right, brother. I'm going to have to wrap you up right there.
All right, sir.
I appreciate it. Thank you, brother.
Yes, sir.
Ain't nothing wrong with that. The brother got some really strong views, and ain't nothing wrong with that. This is a free, open show, right, to share and state your views. That's what it is, right? And some stuff going to be said that you don't like, but if you think about it, you may find the point and the principle in there. I want to say one thing before I move on. I'm going down to 9266. And like I said before, something happened, and Brother Warren said it really well. Respect has changed, right? But I think also the training and development and the values change. And that's what the brother talked about earlier. Our attitudes and our beliefs about ourselves have been modified and adjusted. And you can see it in our behaviors, right? You can see it in how we feel about ourselves as we continue to move forward. Slavery is only the root to the problem. If you're going to change anything, you're going to have to get to the root, right? But respect and love for yourself is taught. It's not caught. You can't catch that. You got to be taught that. We have to get into education, training, and developing or retraining and redeveloping our communities, our children, our families, ourselves. That's what's going to happen. 9266. Bring it. What you got?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, hey.
Can you hear me? Okay, hey.
Yes, hey.
So you were talking about, you were just talking about loving ourselves and how, and Mr. Chambers, I just want to say this. You don't offend me. I love to hear your point of view. It's
all right.
You're just very blunt. And some people can't take it, some people can't. I'm one of the ones that can take it. I'm fine with it. But,
all right.
We were talking about loving ourselves, and or slavery taught us to dislike ourselves and to make us feel like we were niggers. But I will say that society now has taught us a different way to dislike ourselves. So Mr. Davis was talking about how we got the blonde hair, we got the blue eyes, we got the, you know, whatever the case is. We you know, they telling us that it's self-love. But if it's self-love, then why can't you love yourself for who you are? So it's teaching us a different way to dislike ourselves, you know, so that, you know, your hair is natural. Or now you wear a weave, so because you wear a weave, you don't love yourself. So we find other ways to put each other down. And it's not just that, but which I guess this is still a slave mentality, or it's a colonizer mentality, because the colonizers do that to themselves, too. We go against each other. You know, just because somebody did get put a relaxer in their hair or whatever, you know, we turn our nose up to them. You know, not thinking about the fact this person don't know how to do hair. You ain't got nothing to do with what they do with their hair. You know, but why are you ridiculing somebody for what they do to themselves? They're not hurting you. So it's almost like we found another way to down ourselves. You know, so we don't necessarily, I don't know if this, they consider this a overflow of slavery or what it is, but we're doing it to ourselves in a different way. You know, we got to wear this makeup, 5 layers of makeup, we got to do this, you know, you're not good enough for this. Your house is not good enough. You need to remodel your house. I'm doing it. You know, everything is not up to par now. So are we in a different kind of slavery? You know, it's just, I think what everybody said today is right. I do agree. You know, everything can't be blamed on slavery. A lot of stuff
I'm with you on that.
But everything can't be blamed on slavery. You know, but is it a different kind of slavery? Not necessarily the transatlantic slavery, but a different type of slavery that's going on right
True.
Now. So I think everybody is right in what they're saying. Everybody is right, you know. And I guess what it is, it's different for different people. You know,
mm-hmm.
everybody's not living in the same type of slavery. And when I say everybody, I mean everybody as in all black people. So,
True.
And another thing I wanted to say was we need to be honest with our kids. And I think that's why they've gotten out of the church. They've gotten out of the church because our parents were only teaching us what they were taught. And that was due to
True.
Slavery. And
mm-hmm.
so then when we started hearing the truth, we're like, you know, this is bull. You know, none of this stuff don't even sound right. You know, and I'm with Mr. Chambers. You know, I think we all got it wrong. We all got it wrong. I don't think slavery Christianity or any religion, I don't think it's as stringent as they make it out to be. You know, I really don't. I think it's way more simpler than we make it. You know, love each other.
Mm-hmm.
Love yourself. Love each other. Respect each other. You know, mind your own daggone business.
True.
That's it. I think we overthink it. overthink it. We overdo it, and we condemn each other in the name of religion. And we are. We're
True.
Just overdoing it. So that's my sister.
All right. Thank you, sister. I appreciate it. I appreciate that. So the real deal is you got to own your own stuff. Now, I'm not going to knock nobody, but I kind of have some thoughts. I'm going to say that about a black woman with blonde hair. I'm just saying, right? As beautiful as y'all are, I'm not sure if y'all need to go that far. But again, it's individual in this society, so you can do whatever you want to do, and you can be whoever you want to be in this culture and society. You got to represent yourself, but I think you also got to think about you representing your family as well. All right, I'm going over to 481-28 for a wrap-up. I got about 3 minutes left. I'm going over there really quickly before I wrap it up. Here we go. Come on. 81-28. I got 2 minutes left, and you got a half of that. Go.
Okay, brother. I just want to say, brother, that, you know, the lack of our Afrocentric thinking and unity and respect for who we are and for us to look at ourselves outside of what we've been told, what we've been trained, and what we've been subject to is killing us. All right? Our disunity is really the problem. The fact that we can find excuses not to like each other when we all need each other. We as a people have to come together. We have to resolve any of the differences that we have because it is actually, in reality, killing us. Health disparities are due to the type of environment that we allow ourselves
True.
To be subject to by our disunity. By us not speaking to our neighbors, not working with our neighbors, our lack of social interaction, of community in this, of our unity. We used to be able to talk to each other, and we used to be able to discipline each other's kids when they were wrong. Now we want to fight each other behind them. How is that unity? How can we come together? This is what Eurocentricity has done to us. Us thinking, judging, and seeing ourselves through someone else's culture is destroying us. We got to look at ourselves
True.
Through ourselves and about ourselves, not about anybody else. We have to untrain our beliefs in other people.
I like that.
You look at people's greatness and look at our own. Okay.
All right.
Because
thank you, brother. I'm sorry to cut you off, but I gotta wrap it up right there. I appreciate it. We'll come back next week, but thank you. We're going to continue the conversation. I appreciate that. Sorry to cut you off, brother, but I'm just running out of time. We have so much to say. All I can say right now is look at yourself, examine yourselves, think about your value system, and peace. Have a great day.
To be willing to march into hell. That one man scorned and covered with scars still strove.